Welcome to GhostBiz here on the Business Report on Nova 103.5. I'm Gary Struble, chatting to the finance ghost about what's going on around the markets. So, Ghost, let's start out with a big one. President Cyril Ramaphosa got a letter from Donald Trump saying 30% tariffs because they've been mean. Do the markets even care? Does anyone think this is actually going to happen? And should it happen, what should we expect to see coming out of our own domestic markets?
Hi, Gary, and to all the listeners, that is a very fun place to start. The answer, I think, is honestly, who knows? I don't even think Trump knows what his next move is on any of these tariffs at any point in time. I mean, we're talking about a guy who woke up and decided to put a copper tariff in place as though, I don't know, everyone's going to suddenly arrive in the US and just find tons of copper and go and mine it there because he doesn't like how much they import copper. I actually have no idea if the US has copper or not, but the fact that there was some shock at these tariffs tells me that even if they did, it's not exactly something you can magically start getting out the ground a week from now. So it never makes any sense, let's be honest. And I think that makes it difficult for the markets to actually infer too much from what's going on with tariffs. I will say this, because I think it's an important point, is that there are a lot of groups in South Africa who really politicize these tariffs, and they keep trying to put forward this view that, you know, the only reason we're getting these tariffs is because we're being punished for some of our policies, stuff like BEE, et cetera. The reality is that Trump is putting tariffs on most countries, loads of countries. There were a bunch of other ones that got letters on the same day as us, like Malaysia was on there, I think. Japan was certainly on there. Those places don't have BEE. So much as people are trying very hard to equate the tariffs to some of the, shall we say, politically convenient things to fight over, I'm just not sure that that's the reality at all. I really think that these tariffs would happen either way. What will the impact be on South Africa? Well, probably negative, at least in the short term. I've got to tell you that I don't hate our global geopolitical standing right now. Yes, the ANC has definitely made the wrong friends in some places, and that doesn't help us. But overall, the global South, BRICS, this kind of non-US exceptionalism grouping is becoming more and more and more interesting. And I think it actually does worry Trump, because otherwise he wouldn't come out with statements like he does about, you know, if the BRICS do this, then the tariffs will be even worse, et cetera, et cetera. You know, what is he so afraid of? Sounds to me like he's afraid of BRICS growing in stature. And the approach being taken by the US right now is only going to alienate more and more countries. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? So will we find other trading partners to pick up the slack from the stuff that we export to the US? Yes, over time, I expect we would, but that doesn't mean there won't be some near-term pain. I think very little of it will land on the JSE, though, to be honest. It's going to be very sector-specific, things like agriculture. Yes, there are one or two companies that will be affected by this, companies that provide packaging, for example, into agri, but I don't think you're going to suddenly see the JSE Top 40 take a knock, for example, because of tariffs. That's just not what the components of that index really relate to.
Okay, let's turn our attention now to something that we think is going to happen, and that is the fact that Vodacom and Remgro have been given the green light to combine their fiber assets into a new venture. That is the Competition Commission, which initially said no to the deal and then eventually said yes. Just tell us, give us a bit of background to that story and whether these sorts of mega mergers are good news, in fact, for the South African consumer.
So for me, this merger is a prime example of where the Competition Commission is acting way outside its mandate. They have this broad public interest concept, and they tend to use that to go and do all kinds of other things, usually related to implementation of BEE. Now, for the record, I have a relatively unpopular opinion, which is that historically, I think BEE actually did quite a lot of good in South Africa and was very necessary to transform the economy. I think without it, things would have gotten quite bad. I really do. But equally, I believe that there should be a sunset clause to it. And actually, to my knowledge, when BEE was first put together, the whole idea was that it would essentially be a temporary piece of legislation, try and achieve some redress for the past, and then give effectively, I don't want to call it a level playing field, but basically just take BEE away, essentially. Just don't try and force the situation any longer. But it feels like government just keeps doubling down on what's going on out there. And then the Competition Commission interprets this as a good excuse to take its public interest mandate and use that to force companies to do BEE transactions and put in place certain structures that aren't even required by law. It sometimes feels like the commission just wakes up that day and says, oh, you know, we would just like you to be more empowered if you'd like this deal to go ahead. Like, it makes it very, very, very difficult for deal making because there's just no certainty. I think if it's a genuine competition issue, then obviously that should sit within the ambit of the Competition Commission. But if they're just going to use their public interest standing or mandates and try and force BEE, it makes it very difficult. Now, I don't know what conditions yet have been put forward by Vodacom and Remgro's subsidiary to try and get this deal across the line. But basically, the ComCom initially blocked it. And this was despite Vodacom and Remgro putting some really, really good terms on the table around stuff they would be doing to improve access to internet, etc., all of which is genuine empowerment, without a doubt. If more people have access to cheaper internet, they will be more empowered. There's no debate around this. And yet the Competition Commission originally wanted to block the deal. Now, I just don't see the point of that. I really don't. It makes it very hard for a telecoms business like Vodacom to actually invest in South Africa, create jobs, achieve growth. It's not a growing space in the traditional cell phone services. So something like fiber is where they can actually invest, as opposed to going and doing deals offshore and helping to grow other economies rather than our own. So on one hand, I'm very glad to see that this merger appears to be going ahead. But on the other, I still want to just see the conditions that Vodacom and Remgro had to agree to, because I hope that they are mainly competition-related conditions. But based on the recent track record of the ComCom, it would not shock me if there are some, shall we say, rather wide-ranging applications of the term public interest.
All right, let's look at a global share now. That's Prosus, who you have spoken about a few times on the show. We know that you are have a position in that company as well. So if you're listening to this, just know that the ghost is has some skin in this game. But Prosus have just gone into the market and raised over 15 billion rand in debt capital. Tell us, one, how they've been able to do that so quickly, and two, is this really a big deal? What are they going to do with that money?
Yeah, Gary, it was actually you who pointed out to me on this show recently that I'm in danger of being put down as a Prosus cheerleader, which I did laugh at, and there was an element of truth in it. But at the end of the day, I do have high conviction on this particular long position, so it is going to sound a bit like a cheerleader, I suppose. In this case, all they've done is they've gone and raised some debt to basically replace bonds that either matured this year or are due to mature next year. It is actually an incredible number. I almost had to stop and just think to myself if that's right, but it is right. 750 million euros does work out to roughly 15 billion rand, which is incredible to think of, right? I mean, that is bigger than most of the mid caps on the JSE. And this is just one bond that Prosus basically issued in the European market just as part of its balance sheet. So it is a gigantic, gigantic business. And this bond issuance was very well supported. It was actually more than four times oversubscribed. So lots of investors happy to invest in these corporate bonds issued by Prosus. And the important thing to remember here is a bond is obviously debt, not equity. So investors are looking for downside protection rather than upside potential. It's a very different lens with which to, you know, through which to actually view a company. And so I think what helps here is because of the recent results, Prosus is now at a stage where their business, excluding Tencent, is actually free cash flow positive. And obviously that gives debt investors a warm and fuzzy feeling. Now, over time, if Prosus can keep improving, then hopefully their credit rating will also improve and they'll move up from the current level, which is around BBB, which means roughly moderate levels of credit risk. If they can move higher, they are already investment grade, but there are degrees of investment grade, then that brings down their borrowing costs, which of course just expands profits for their equity investors. So much as a bond issuance is not something that is of direct relevance to an equity investor, it is actually something to keep an eye on, because if you can get cheaper access to debt capital, it's good for shareholders.
And then Ghost, you know, it wouldn't be a show without a little Trustco mention. Right at the bottom of your nibbles, probably a good time to talk about newsletters that that you can go and subscribe to. Finance Ghost, you can get along to ghostmail.co.za. A number of different newsletters, articles, access to databases, information, and so forth. If you're an investor and you want to know stuff about companies in our area, then that's the way place to go. In your director's nibbles, you've said Trustco haven't released financials for the year ended August 2024. I mean, that's nearly a year ago now. They're waiting for a ruling, but weren't they in trouble for doing this in the past? And typically, perhaps just give us a generic answer on this. When a company doesn't release its financials in time, what message does the market take from that?
Yeah, good old Trustco. We haven't seen much from them lately, but there they were. And I knew you would notice, Gary. You never miss out on that. I'm convinced you have an alert set up on Google for any time that I mention Trustco, just for the show. But yes, basically, they are very late on the release of their financials, and they're waiting for some kind of ruling from the JSE to do with, I think it was something to do with auditor accreditation in Namibia. I kind of half read it, to be honest with you, because it's just the usual story of nothing is ever really simple at Trustco, and yet this is a company that still thinks they're going to go and be listed on the NASDAQ. I can tell you, and I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it again, if you think that South African investors are not hugely patient with this kind of stuff, then you should try American investors who have an incredible universe of stocks to choose from. Why would they spend time and effort on something so marginal that constantly has these kind of delays and issues and just weird structures? And it's just always something going on at Trustco, and it's not usually something that is making people a lot of money. But anyway, it is what it is. And yeah, it doesn't help if a company is late with issuing its financials. Obviously, it just increases the perceived risk around the business. So much of a share price is sentiment at the end of the day. Why does something trade at a PE of 5 or 10 or 15 or even 30 is because investors need to feel very good about those underlying cash flows. How do you make them feel good about them? Track record and perception. And perception is a very difficult thing. And once it starts to turn sour, it's even harder to get it back. It's basically a company's reputation. You know, it's the old story. It takes years and years and years to build a positive reputation, but it can be gone in an instant. It's the same with investor perception. And stuff like late financials, etc., just doesn't really help their case. So who knows where it all ends with Trustco. The last I saw from the company is that they are keen to drop their current listings in favor of something in the US. Will it happen? Won't it happen? Who knows? At this point, they just need to get their financials out.
All right, Ghost, as always, lovely to hear your thoughts. If you've got any questions for the Ghost, you can send them along to tbr@nova.com.na or get a hold of us on socials. And remember, you can get this episode and all of our previous episodes wherever you pick up your podcasts, on Apple, Android, or Spotify. Or go to nova.com.na and you can listen to it there as well. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.